We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Ryan Finley and Michael Lev. Guys, it is a bye week. Is this the third bye week of the season? How many times have we had three bye weeks
in
the season?
It is the third bye week of the season. I don't know, maybe not since the, you know, the founding of college football 150 years ago has anyone had three bye weeks in a season, but it's kind of nice and it comes at a really good time for the Arizona Wildcats because, man, I just felt like after that last game that they needed a mental break.
Yes.
More than anything. They just seemed deflated, defeated, dejected, you know, whatever DE adjective you want to throw out there. So this is a chance to kind of regroup and refresh and figure out some things and, you know, try to put their best foot forward for the last 3 weeks of the season and salvage something from a campaign that's kind of gone off the rails here.
You might say that they're going to try to get in sync this week because it's their bye, bye, bye.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just that clever.
Impressive.
Thank you. It's weird to think about a bye week as being huge, but it's a big week. They can't afford to lose their bye week. You know, you have obviously the new defensive coordinator, Chuck Cecil, and I don't think had much time to put a lot in for the Oregon State game. Now, if they're going to make any sort of longer term-ish tweaks, if they're going to maybe stop doing some things, I think now would be the time when you put that in. In that regard, I think it's huge, and I think it's huge in the future of the quarterback position. I'm guessing here, Michael Lev, I do not cover the team. I'm guessing that a decision will be made sooner rather than later about sort of what the plan is going forward.
You know, Arizona is in a unique situation right now because they've lost, four games in a row ever since starting 4-1. Remember, we were talking about Arizona being atop of the Pac-12 South about a month ago, and wow, how things have changed. But now, Arizona, they're sitting at 4-5 on the season. The defense is atrocious. Probably the worst unit in the Pac-12 right now, I would say.
Them or Colorado.
But you don't want to be in that position if you're Arizona. Because what has been Arizona's identity for some of the best teams in program history?
It's
been all about their defense. And
special teams.
And special teams. But, you know, that game against Oregon State last weekend, I said these players that came back for homecoming, guys that played under Dick Tomey, they got to be sick to their stomachs right now watching this. You know, you don't give up almost 400 yards in one half to Oregon State. And, I mean, kudos to Oregon State. I mean, they came in and had a great game plan and they executed it. But you know, now Arizona, they're 4-5 on the season. They have three games left. They're now at this point where they get a recharge. And now they got to play at Oregon, who's also on a bye week. So they're going to come ready and healthy. Then you have Utah at home, another top eight team that's looking to get to the Pac-12 championship and possibly a college football playoff. And then ASU up in Tempe. So this is a difficult position for Arizona. My question to you guys is, after that loss to Oregon State, do you feel like that was the season right there? It's all over and done with?
Oh, I don't know about over. I mean, I think that there are things you can – even in a lost season, I think that there are things to get excited about week in and week out. I think that player development is something that I'll be looking at in the next 3 weeks. That said, for this team to play beyond, November 29th, they're going to need to pull off two pretty major upsets. And so, you know, is their season over? Probably. I think that there's still a lot to look for, and I still find them very compelling.
You know, I was thinking about this the last couple of days for whatever reason, probably because I'm often just thinking about narratives and with ways to frame stories. But, you know, maybe the best case scenario at this point is that they finish 5-7, which would be the same record as last season. But if they did that by beating ASU in the last game of the year, I think people would think about the season differently than they did a year ago. Mm-hmm. That they might head into the offseason with optimism. We have defeated our rival. We have our quarterback of the future. You can at least sort of see the direction that things are headed. So no, I don't think all is lost at this point. Defense is the biggest question probably right now. We'll get into the quarterback thing in a little bit. I think that's pretty clear. Defense is, it's cloudy. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what can you do, you know, during this time? And I've been working on this story about Chuck Cecil talking to some of his former colleagues in the NFL, you know, about, like, you know, what does he bring to the table? What can he do during a bye week? And, you know, the kind of the message I got was, you don't go in there and just trash the previous coaching regime. You don't, you know, and that's not something Chuck Cecil would do anyway.
Right.
You go into those film sessions and say, okay, we need to, this is what we need to do. And this is how we're going to do it. You need to do X, Y, and Z. And these are the things we're going to work on over the next couple weeks. And if we do these things, you will start to see results. So I think he's going to take a pretty pragmatic approach to, you know, to generating some improvement on that side of the ball, which is where it's really needed the most, I think, at this point in this roller coaster season that they're having. The other thing I want to see from that side of the ball is just some fire. You know, like show that like you care. I mean, I'm sure they do care, but like I said earlier, they looked to me like they were really dejected during, as that was all unfolding against Oregon State, that they weren't fighting, mm-hmm. you know? So hopefully, you know, Chuck can instill some of that spirit in them here over the next couple of weeks, which is kind of what we thought was going to happen heading into Oregon State. Right. And I think the early breakdowns in that game kind of caused that to dissipate.
Well, they showed a little bit of fight in the second half. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a couple of stops they were, you know, starting to claw their way back. But I don't know what the tipping point of that game was. But, yeah, you're right, Lev. There was a point in time late in that game where they looked defeated and they looked checked out.
The tipping point, number one, I think, was that drive at the end of the first half, mm-hmm. which you should never allow a team to drive for a touchdown from its own 8-yard line with less than a minute left in half of football. And then I think the missed field goal, which, you know, it would have been an 8-point game at that point. And you can kind of be like, okay, we're within a score. We get one more stop. We get the ball back. You know, we've got a shot here. Those were probably the two biggest tipping points, if you want to call them that.
Absolutely. And back to Lev's point about what you can do in a bye week. Michael, I think a lot of it, too, is what you stop doing. I think that there were so many wrinkles, and you know better than I do, that Marcel Yates had put in and would put in, you know, week to week, right? Hey, here's what we're going to do to stop UCLA. Here's what we're going to do this. I think it's very clear that these players are either too young or too unsure of themselves to handle many wrinkles. I think that in the interim, in the substitute teacher situation there, I think you simplify. I would not be surprised if this Arizona team basically runs, you know, a half dozen concepts the rest of the way. If it's just let's work at playing faster and doing less. And, you know, maybe that's the solution.
Yeah, and I think that can help, too, with the communication issues that they've clearly been having in the defensive backfield. And I was
The first drive that Oregon State had.
The last drive of the first half. I mean, the tight end is, like, wide open in the quarter of the end zone. And this happened after a timeout,
right,
too, where I'm sure the instruction was, whatever you do, don't let anyone get open in the end zone. Like, keep, mm-hmm. you know, build a wall, you know, but by the goal line. That sort of thing is inexplicable. It's, mm-hmm. it's hard to comprehend how that could happen. I think that the safety play this year has been a major problem. It was a position that I think a lot of us thought going into the year was going to be a strength of the defense, and mm-hmm. I think it's been anything but. I don't know what happened. I don't want to pick on guys, but I'm very confused as to what happened to Scotty Young Jr., mm-hmm. who I thought was really on the verge of having a breakout season. And he now, I feel like he's miscast in a free safety role. Like maybe he should be playing the spur position up near the line of scrimmage and not being that guy who, you know, is sort of reading the pass play and covering a quarter of the width of the field because he's just been late in arriving on the scene repeatedly. And you're just seeing I mean, how many times have we seen that game where Christian Roland Wallace, the freshman cornerback, would kind of let somebody go, thinking that he had help, and then there was no help?
What was that first touchdown? I mean, he stopped.
Yeah.
He stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's kind of take a look at this defense by layers. Mm-hmm. What's been the most disappointing part about Arizona's defense?
Lev, you and I will agree.
Man. What? Yeah, defensive line. Let's start with that. Yep. You know, there were a few guys who, again, like I thought that Jalen Harris and J.B. Brown were on the verge of having breakout seasons. And there was evidence to suggest that was going to be the case based on the way they finished last year. I mean, those guys were really coming on. J.B. Brown was really productive over the second half of the season. And then you saw it at the spring game. Jalen Harris was the best player on the field. Like, what? It's hard to understand, like, what has happened to those guys. Like, why can't they – why aren't they winning one-on-one battles? Why aren't they getting into the backfield, being more disruptive? You know, there's a lot of theories about, did Jalen Harris put on too much weight? That's been sort of his battle throughout. Maybe he's a little too bulky and he's lost his speed. J.B. Brown moving from inside to outside and back and forth, has that curtailed his development? Kylan Wilborn, remember he was right up there with Colin Schooler and Tony Fields as a freshman, and he hasn't been the same player since, so – it's kind of mysterious. I also think that the injury that Finn Connolly suffered at USC, and he's basically playing with one arm, I think that's hurt a lot more than people think. So that would be the first – that's where it all starts for me on defense is, you know, playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, disrupting the quarterback. That can make things so much easier for the rest of the defense, and because those guys are struggling, it's making things harder.
Well, and two – what do we hear about all throughout preseason training camp was the depth. Oh, Arizona's got eight guys that they could constantly rotate. But if those guys aren't producing, do you really have depth or do you just have a bunch of bodies that you can just throw about there?
Yeah.
You know, you look at that Oregon State game. Oregon State's offensive line was really pushing. Right. They were really manhandling Arizona's defensive line. And it's not like Oregon State is known to have the best offensive line in the Pac-12. You go back to a couple weeks ago against Stanford. Once again, that offensive line was manhandling Arizona's D-line. And the thing that concerns me the most right now is what is Arizona doing to improve that part of the ball? Look at Arizona's recruiting class. How many defensive linemen do they have?
Right.
One.
And he's a defensive end?
He's an athlete, quote unquote. So –
aren't we all?
Hardest thing – well, speak for yourself. The hardest thing to find, in my opinion, in college football recruiting is the ready-made defensive tackle or the projectable defensive tackle, especially on the West Coast. And if there are guys on the West Coast, it seems like Oregon, Washington, USC, and Utah are gobbling them up. So you got to be really resourceful in recruiting. You have to have a really good eye. You have to make some really good connections, and
preferably,
maybe you have to mind the junior college ranks like they did, you know, for this last year's class with some, you know, guys who've shown flashes in Trayvon Mason and Miles Tapasoa. But yeah, no, they've got, 13 recruits committed so far, and they need, at least 7 or 8 more to have a full class, and they better find some defensive linemen or, you know, I think no matter who the defensive coordinator is next year, they're going to have similar problems.
Rich Rod called those guys war daddies. That the one thing, the rarest thing in the world is a war daddy defensive tackle. And he said that they all went to Alabama and Auburn, basically. And some of them go to LSU, I guess. I think this is also where having a good connection to the Polynesian community, to the islands, would help you. There are not a lot of people who fit the size profile of a good nose tackle, let's say. There are more per capita on the islands and in American Samoa than there are, say, in Tucson, Arizona. The U of A hired a guy, I thought, specifically to make inroads in that community, to make inroads with those schools. I haven't seen a ton from him. Tapusoa obviously has been a little bit of a bright spot, so maybe he's the guy. But, you know, I think that Arizona is going to need more recruiting of those kinds of players.
So in your layer-by-layer kind of thing, I think that because the defensive line has struggled – my sense is that the linebackers are trying to do too much. Sometimes they're shooting gaps when they should be more disciplined. They're trying to compensate, and I think it has affected their play. Colin Schooler doesn't seem to be playing with as much kind of confidence
right.
as we've seen in the past, where he's always seemed like he was so sure of, you know, I've identified what's happening on this play, and I'm going to shoot my gun and fly into the backfield and make the play. We see it sometimes. We haven't seen it as much. Tony Fields has had a good year. He's something of a freelancer just by nature of just the way he plays. I think Anthony Pandy has been one of the bright spots on defense this year, and someone that you could build around last year. That's my kind of basic analysis of that spot. And then the third level, as I mentioned, the safety production has not been there at all. The communication between the corners and safeties has been problematic. The experiment of moving Jace Whitaker inside looked like it was going to work out early on, but it really hasn't worked out since. He's really kind of struggled with tight ends and the kind of bigger receivers on those inside routes. I do like the future for Bobby Wolf and Christian Roland Wallace at cornerback. I think those are some guys you can build around. But you know, if I were kind of constructing the rest of this recruiting class, I would look in the middle of the defense. Defensive tackles, linebackers, and safeties. Those are the guys that you got to bring in.
Right. It's like having a good catcher, shortstop, and center fielder. When you're solid up the middle. I mean, really? I mean, but that's true. I mean, I would take – if you asked me right now, would I take a good nose tackle or a good defensive end? My goodness, give me a good nose tackle, right? Because things flow from there.
Yeah, and I know that some of the guys, the top guys that they're pursuing are defensive ends. I'm not saying they shouldn't bring those guys in because, of course, you need as many good pass rushers as you can find. But that would be the starting point for me. And it looks like, based on some of the recent offers that they put out, that they're kind of recognizing that.
So let's take a look at the two quarterbacks, Khalil Tate and Grant Gunnell. Grant Gunnell took a bulk of the snaps in the second half. He led, was it 5 out of the 6 drives Grant Gunnell had in the second half resulted in touchdowns?
It was all 5 touchdown drives that they had were led by
Grant Gunnell.
And Khalil Tate led 2 field goal drives. And that was it. I mean, Grant, there's circumstances that go into all these things. Like if there hadn't been a holding call on that one run by J.J. Taylor, Khalil Tate would have had a touchdown drive on his resume. But I think we can all agree, maybe I'm wrong, but just the eye test, the offense seems to be running smoother with Grant Gunnell at quarterback. I'm also working on a piece that's going to be up on Tucson.com on Thursday. It'll be in the paper on Friday, the latest Cat Stats, where I look at a bunch of different statistical elements to compare the two guys. And here's the one that jumped out to me the most. This one might like kind of floor you guys, but I talked to a buddy of mine who works for Pro Football Focus and asked him, you know, can you give me their stats under pressure, however they define under pressure, okay? Khalil Tate, it's happened 68 times. He's 13 for 44. When under pressure, completion percentage of 29.5%. Grant Gunnell has been under pressure 47 times. He's 19 for 32, 59.4%. 30% difference in completion percentage for the two quarterbacks when under pressure.
Do you think some of that has to do with Gunnell's height? Is that as the pocket collapses around you and you need to get rid of it, you can see over a little bit more?
You could make that case, but like then how do you explain, I don't know, Russell Wilson's success in the NFL or Drew Brees? Like,
but it's better to be tall than short when you're a quarterback.
Yeah, but I think it's more how you handle those situations. Do you know where your outlets are? Do you know what you're supposed to do? I mean, there was this play that I outlined in 5 Takeaways this week. It was pretty much the same exact play. They let Hamika Rashid Jr. rush into the backfield. Okay, they allowed the free rusher, and they countered that by releasing the backfield into the running back into the flat to the same side. So basically, what are you supposed to do there? You let the guy come in. It's almost like a screen pass. You let him come in. You throw the ball to the running back. Khalil Tate had that situation. He didn't throw the ball. I don't know why. He sort of pumped and pulled it down and ran to the other side and, like, maybe gained a yard. Grant Gunnell, it was 3rd and 8 at their own, like, 3-yard line. He threw the ball. J.J. Taylor caught it, made a couple guys miss, and got a first down. Was it a great pass by Grant Gunnell? No, but was it the right pass to make in that situation? Yes. So I don't know if that's knowing the offense, feel for the game, whether, Khalil Tate is seeing ghosts, kind of like Sam Darnold. because of what happened in those Washington and USC games where he was, you know, just under pressure kind of like from the opening gun. But, you know, that's been a huge difference among many between the two quarterbacks.
Sure, sure. Again, it's to me, when I watch them, it's the difference between a point guard and a shooting guard out there. I think Cannell gets the ball in and out pretty quickly, catches it, distributes it. And Tate maybe is more capable of the big play and the electrifying play. But that usually starts with him extending a play, which obviously throws the rest of the offense into a little bit of chaos.
And they're not – and defenses aren't letting him do that anymore.
Right, right.
Like he used to have these escape routes to the sidelines, you know. I was talking to Anthony Heron of the Pac-12 networks, and he said there are some guys who are kind of vertical escape guys and there are others who are lateral escape guys. And he said Khalil, for the most part, has been a lateral escape guy, and disciplined – pass rushes aren't allowing him to have those avenues to escape. And so instead of going forward, he's ending up going backward. And even the, like when he gets sacked, it's for more yardage than when Grant Gunnell gets sacked. And all of those things are putting Arizona, you know, behind the chains.
When was that formula created to stop Khalil Tate?
I think it was created by Chris Peterson in that game. I mean, the previous game was the best.
In this year. I was going to go back to even last year. You look at that game against – or no, 2 years ago against USC.
People would argue that it happened against maybe earlier in his career, that if you look at 2017, there was a fall off in the rushing yardage. But that's a totally different offense. You know, a less experienced quarterback. I mean, look, we were all talking about how awesome he was at Colorado like a month ago,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy to think about now. But it was probably the best passing performance of his career. Maybe Colorado's just that bad. Maybe they just didn't know how to do
it.
But
then bad.
Chris Peterson came in and he's like, you know what? Everyone else is afraid to rush this guy. We're going to rush this guy. And we're going to do it like on first down. We're going to do it on second down. And it really messed with his head, I feel like.
All right, let's take a look at the Pac-12 schedule for this weekend. It's our Pac-12 pick'ems. First game, Friday, 8:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, kickoff time.
Can I go on a quick tangent about Mountain Time? Just not a fan.
Yeah?
You know what happens to us every year here in Arizona when everyone else switches the clocks and we go into Mountain Time? It just throws me off. I'm like, you know, it's like 5:15 on Monday, and I'm like, where's the Monday Night Football game? Why hasn't it started yet?
6:15.
Right. I think Pacific Time is the best time.
Me too. As a
sports fan, I mean, there's always something on. Like – if you were in, say, California during Thanksgiving week, you could wake up and there would be sports, major sports on from like 8 in the morning till midnight. It's the best.
Don't you like waking up on a college football Saturday and having the game on at 9 a.m., like right away?
Oh, I think about that with the NFL. Last week, the hour between 10 and 11 last week was a rough one because I was ready for my red zone.
Late game up in Corvallis. The Huskies taking on the Oregon State Beavers. You know, Oregon State coming off that win over the Wildcats. Now they're playing Washington at home. Is this a game where the Beavers can trap the Huskies?
I don't think so because Washington's been struggling so much. You know,
this is a get-right game.
They lost at home to Oregon. They lost at home to Utah. Granted, these are the best two teams in the conference, but I don't think Washington ever envisioned themselves being 5-4 at this point in the season. Vegas certainly doesn't seem to believe in the Beavers. They've got Washington favored by 10 in this game. I would be reluctant to lay that many points, but I do think that Washington is going to win this game. Oregon State, weirdly enough, has been better on the road this year than at home. And I just think that, you know, if you're going to try to play bully ball against Washington, that's not necessarily the formula for success. They can handle it, and I think they will.
I will say this. I think Oregon State's better coached than I thought. I thought that they came in here and really, really showed Arizona who was boss last week. That said, yeah, I like the Huskies.
You know, it's a Friday night game. Starts at 8:30 down here in Tucson. Pac-12 after dark on a Friday night. Things get weird. And the game is in Corvallis. So you know what? I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to go with the Beavers at home.
Nice.
Saturday, Stanford taking on Colorado in Boulder. 1 p.m. kickoff. On Pac-12 networks. Mm-hmm. Colorado, if Arizona doesn't have the worst defense in the Pac-12, like you guys said, Colorado definitely does. They're playing against Stanford. KJ Costello is back for the Cardinal. And Stanford is coming off a bye week as well. So
Stanford's getting three on the road.
They're giving.
Giving three. Did I say getting? I meant giving. Yeah. They're giving three on the road. I still like Stanford big.
Yeah. I like the Cardinal.
I'm going to go with Colorado.
You are a hater.
it makes no sense because of all those factors that you just laid out. Colorado struggling mightily. Stanford's quarterback is back. They had a bye. All those things seem to favor Stanford. But this being the Pac-12 and everyone's sort of gravitating toward the middle, but at the end of the day, I'm going to take the Buffaloes.
That's a very on-brand Michael Lev pick, picking against Stanford. Very on-brand.
By the way, Colorado.
You picked against Stanford like every week. You hate Stanford. Not hate.
I actually love David Shaw. Right. The thought crossed my mind this week that he'd be a really good coach at USC, which is probably a pretty unpopular stance to take since it's sort of like Urban Meyer or bust. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Ground and pound.
Yeah, right? If you want to get back to like
big boy football?
Big boy football at USC. You know, student body right and student body left. You do a lot worse than David Shaw.
Could David Shaw recruit?
Of course.
By the way,
I think so.
You know who really ran a great ground and pound offense for a while and is now unemployed? Willie Taggart. Probably can't be the head coach at USC, but maybe he can be a coordinator.
They raised, was it $20 million in private donations?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Welcome to Florida.
To not coach football. That's insane. Speaking of USC, Trojans on the road against ASU up in Tempe. This game is on ABC at 1:30 p.m. Look at that. Pac-12 getting on the national stage in the middle of the afternoon. This game, I'm torn just because I think USC is really kind of playing for Clay Helton's job right now. And with that being said, if ASU comes out and dominates USC, did Lane Kiffin get fired after they lost to ASU?
On the tarmac in Phoenix. Yeah.
So
that's not going to happen.
This won't be a tarmac game, even though there's now an AD finally to fire him. Can I jump in with my pick?
Go for it.
Okay? I like SC. I do. I'm shocked at the line. ASU is a 1.5-point favorite. That means Vegas thinks that if these teams played on neutral ground, ASU would win by like a half a point or a point. I don't know. Looking at the eye test, looking at sort of the common denominator test, I think SC is a better team, and I think SC is going to win.
Are they going to play hard for Clay Helton, or did that dream die last week? You know, I'm not sure how invested they're going to be at this point. And I know that Arizona State is going to be fully invested. They're going to play really hard. They're coming off of their two worst performances of the season by far. They had a bye to kind of get things right. I'm going to take the Sun Devils.
Oh, man. Because if ASU wins this game, they're bowl eligible after this one, right?
Sure.
So, man, I don't know. I'm just gonna go with ASU. I don't think they're gonna fire Clay Helton on the tarmac. But if ASU comes out and dominates USC, I think you will be looking at USC looking for a new head coach. And also too, they have, like you said, they have their new AD in Mike Bond. So now the process of finding a new head coach, if Clay Helton is the guy, is, I guess, already starting.
Is it Bond or Bone?
Is it Bone?
It's Bone.
Okay. Mike Bone.
Tomato. Mike Bone and I have a history, shall we say. No, he was the athletic director at San Diego State a decade ago. That's the only reason why I know him. That's all.
All right. Washington State against Cal in Berkeley. 5 p.m. kickoff on Pac-12 Networks.
I'm taking the Cougars in this one. They're favored by 7.5. It's a tricky number, but I just don't think, no matter what Cal's quarterback situation is, and I'm not sure exactly where that stands, I just don't think they can keep pace with Washington State. Now, that being said, there have been games, it was last year or maybe the year before or maybe each of the last 2 years, where Cal's kind of been pretty physical with Washington State and kind of played their style of ball. So this is one of those games where who can play their style? You know, which tempo is it going to be? I think that Cal, the state that they're in, if the score gets up into the 20s, 30s, that they're just going to have a hard time. So I'm going to take the Cougars.
Yeah.
I like Cal. I do. I think this is the kind of game they win once a year. Although you could argue that win for them already was the game at Washington earlier in the season. This is a team I think that, you know, could take advantage of, I think, a pretty fractured Washington State team. You know, we sort of pencil Cal in for like 10 to 13 points every week, right? That's, they're just not great offensively. You know who's bad defensively? Washington State. I think this could be like a 28-24 Cal win. Again, it's hard to win on the road in the league. I think Cal's better than people think. I think Washington State's not so good.
You don't like the Cougars score more than 30 in this game?
No.
Anthony Gordon's a damn good quarterback.
You can write it down. We'll see what happens next week. I think,
okay.
And by the way, at some point, we're going to have somebody go through and tally up our picks. Maybe we should do that next week.
We'll do that.
That's Alec Weiss.
I like the Cougars in this
great idea.
All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. And also, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Lev, Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.